Welcome to the You Can Do It Too podcast. Here we talk about how to tackle tasks, finish projects, and fulfill your dreams one step at a time. Regardless of your situation, you can make it happen. It's about the power of momentum and how real people are living their dreams right now. I'm Michelle Forsythe. Now let's get started. Today we're talking with Carolyn Bruin. Carolyn is a professionally trained executive and confidence coach with over 18 years experience working in finance. Her career has led her to live in Australia, Singapore, and London, working across leadership, strategy, chief of staff, and senior operations and technology roles. She is also passionate about neuroscience, mindfulness, and the associated behavioral science of coaching. Her goal is to help individuals and organizations achieve outstanding growth, confidence, and keep trust levels to enable lasting, exceptional results. Welcome, Carolyn. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michelle. Great to be here.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk a little bit more about your background. How did you first get started? And my cat Java is participating in our podcast interview today. How did you get started being an executive and confidence coach?
It's been a bit of a journey, these things. It never kind of starts one day and happens the next. I had been in finance for around 12 years, I think, and I got my own coach. And, through some ups and downs, as always happens in careers, I really found it very useful having my own coach, and they really helped me with some tricky challenges that I had. And it was actually towards the, probably about 5 years in that my coach said to me, "Have you actually thought about coaching yourself? Because I hear you and I don't have to do very much work. In fact, you do a lot of it." And it was then I had a bit of a big life event, a tough breakup, which meant that I moved from Australia to Singapore. And that was a real shift in terms of, you know, where I was mentally and obviously physically, because I moved countries. And that for me, that was a different chapter. And that was when I said, all right, now I'm actually going to do it. And I went and did my training at CTI. And it took about a year and a half, because it's quite a lot of all the training that you need to do and all the hours that you need to get in. It's 200 hours of coaching. And from there, I did some of the coaching within my organization that I was in, the bank that I was working for, and externally. And just in December this year, I decided to leave finance and actually go double down into the coaching world. So it's a relatively new thing in terms of it being my full-time job, but a really exciting path to be on. And I'm really enjoying it.
That's awesome. So, and it's interesting. I love that you said that the coach said, okay, I don't really have to do so much for you now. So maybe it's time for you to consider coaching and taking that shift. So let's talk a little bit more about the getting into entrepreneurship, because especially with the world today, there's a lot of people who are in transition. They either don't have a job to go back to, or it's all up in the air. So there are more and more people considering going into entrepreneurship. So you took your training and that. So how did you get started with being an entrepreneur? Like, what kind of steps did you take to get started as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Even that question, it's I haven't really thought of myself as an entrepreneur. I think in some ways I kind of felt like it might frighten me off a bit, the prospect. So I think it's one of those things. I think some people really have that drive that they've always had, that direction that they will have. And, you know, they've always been that kind of person. I have a relatively unplanned person. I am much more just trust in the outcome. If you work really hard and you do your best, then the best possible situation will come up. And that's happened for me. That's moved me around the world. I've always worked hard and sometimes maybe too many long hours. But my ethos has always been, you know, operate with integrity, you know, be positive, make sure everyone has a positive interaction with you. And if you're working hard and performing at your best, then that would be the best possible outcome that you can have. And I was reflecting on it actually this week in terms of the what is it that has got me to this point? And I think some of that has been just having confidence to give it a go. So not necessarily having the next 5 years planned, but saying, you know what, I'm just going to try it. And when you're a bit of a perfectionist like I am, that's a tough thing to do. Just have a go. But you know, you put, you know, one foot on the path and see where it takes you. So I think that's been the key thing for me, and particularly in this you know, this year, which has been challenging for so many people. Just taking the opportunities, and you know, what's the worst that can happen? And sometimes you flip it on its head, you kind of go, well, actually, not that much. My risk level is relatively low.
I took the Dale Carnegie program, and that was one of the things was, what's the worst that can happen? And I've always been such an optimist that I struggled with that principle at first. But when you think about it, if you're prepared for the worst, then everything below that makes it's like, well, that's not so bad. That's not so bad. I can deal with that. Right. And even if you don't necessarily think of like, oh, like you're saying that you were like, oh, it's not going to be too bad or whatever. There's still, you're still thinking about it as part of the process. And I also was I always refer to myself as a fly by the seat of my pants kind of person. I just went with whatever opportunities came. I was like, okay, I'm going to see where that goes. And that's how I've gotten to where I am now with my journey as an entrepreneur as well. And as a human. So I find that very interesting that it hasn't been a big process. Right. And yeah, and that's the thing, you can leap. Right.
Definitely. And what I think is very interesting is probably the way that I'm, you know, my, whether it's colleagues or friends, like I can be quite structured and quite organized. And whilst at the same time, you know, when I said to people, I haven't planned this, they kind of say, oh my goodness, really? I thought you were really organized and really planned in that way. And so it's a little bit like imposter syndrome. You know, you're always thinking that everyone else is doing stuff that you're not. But in fact, you know, the majority of people on a, you know, a regular basis feel imposter syndrome. That's men and women. So I think that's when you kind of realize that you're not alone. It's a really big step in terms of that level of confidence that you can have in terms of moving forward.
Yeah, that whole feeling, especially being if a lot of people are solopreneurs or they feel that isolation, and our world is a lot more isolated now. So having that feeling of we're on this journey together is really important to understand and get, right? And feel it.
And that's why I think right now being very deliberate in terms of setting up how you work and yourself in terms of from a day-to-day perspective. Lots of people aren't now getting those external clarifications or ratifications of their performance. You know, you're not at the wall cooler or just going for coffee and having a chat with your boss and say, oh, that was great, you know, well done on this, or just from colleagues. You know, you're at your desk at home, and possibly with children in the background who are pulling you in a direction, or a cat. You know, there's other things which are pulling people and commanding, you know, trying to demand for their attention. And so with that in mind, taking control of how do I wake up in the morning? What is my attitude? How am I seeing this situation? And, you know, the environment I'm working in is incredibly important.
Yeah, the control is an illusion, right? I always think like it's not, I can't control the situation, but I control my response to it, right?
Absolutely.
And I like what you're talking about of a mentor of mine refers to it as creating your day. So you make the decision of, okay, I'm going to wake up and this is what I'm going to do today and that. So what's one of the ways that you've dealt with that whole imposter syndrome? Because that's a very big thing for most people, I would say, especially if they're venturing into entrepreneurship or taking on new challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few things, and I think one of the things to remember is imposter syndrome isn't at a surface level. It goes quite deep. Really, it's you're fundamentally saying, you know, I am an imposter. I am not good enough for this. I shouldn't be here. It's less behavioural rather. You know, I did poorly in that meeting. It's you know, I'm not good in meetings. So imposter syndrome, you need to look deeper. And that comes back to looking at things like your values and really addressing what is your perspective on yourself at a deep level. So one of the things that we look at in the course that I run is, okay, well, let's really distill it back to who are you? Where have you come from? You know, what has shaped you as a person over time, and what is important to you, and when you understand what your building blocks are, which are your values, then you can make decisions in a way that is consistent with yourself at a really authentic level.
Absolutely.
If you're just making decisions based on what you think society demands of you, or your family or expectations of other people, you're not going to be making the best decisions, and ultimately that's when you get that incongruence, which can drive the imposter syndrome. Things like positive affirmations are incredibly powerful. There's lots of different tools that you can have that you can use. Saying I am enough, you know, I am a wonderful entrepreneur, I am successful, I see a great future ahead of me. You know, these kind of things are really powerful in terms of your brain hearing that and over believing it too.
Yeah. And sometimes when we're saying those affirmations, we don't necessarily believe it at our core initially, but the more you keep doing them and the more you keep saying them. When I worked in a corporate environment, a lot of times I used affirmations as my password, right? I would be like, I am successful, or I have a lot of energy or whatever, right? So then, because you type your password a lot, especially when you're in a corporate environment, you're always having to log onto your computer, right? So those are really good tips. I actually co-authored a self-discovery guided journal on knowing who you are, because you're 100% correct. If you know who you are and know your fundamental responses to things, it's that whole flight or fight syndrome, you don't have to worry about it because you already have made that decision. You've already thought about it. You know what your fundamental values are. That's really great. And along with that imposter syndrome and the notion that you are enough is so important. And I like your work as a confidence coach. We obviously need more help with confidence, or else we wouldn't need you. I watched an interview with Simon Sinek the other day. I'm kind of obsessed with Simon Sinek right now and knowing your why. And he said, I find it ridiculous that I need to be in the role that I'm in. Like, why do people need this when it's common sense? My wife always says common sense is not common.
Well, it's interesting, right? And I think this is we talk about this quite a lot in terms of a lot of how we respond is a evolutionary response, you know, for us thousands of years ago, you know, that, and how our brain and body are built is is to kind of keep us alive from saber-toothed tigers. But when you're in an office environment, having that same response to fight, fright, flight, you know, in when you're having a tough meeting or, you know, a bit of a confrontation with someone who's a colleague, you know, the way that our brains function is not helpful for us right now, you know, just losing all sense of speech, of wanting to run away, or just, you know, having that very kind of obvious, you know, red flush or, you know, difficulty in terms of communicating, that isn't something which is helpful. And so what is really important to understand is it's an evolutionary response, and how can we just kind of cut that? How can we stop that from happening? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, if we have that response and we can't control it, then we're not using our prefrontal cortex, which is the thinking, problem-solving part of our brain. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I had a situation when I was at work previously, and I had some challenging situations where I knew that I wasn't using my brain properly. I was mm-hmm. making stupid mistakes, and mm-hmm. it was because I was in a state of fear. And mm-hmm. so once I started to notice that, I had a conversation with my boss, and what I needed from him was reassurance that I was doing it right. Mm-hmm. But I'd moved into a new job, and it was really tough. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, Caroline, you're doing a great job. And all I needed was him to say that. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, my brain completely switched. I started using my prefrontal cortex. I started actually using the energy in my brain for the right things that I needed to be successful, rather than trying to protect myself from a situation which just wasn't appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that fear, whether it's real, well, it's always real to us, right? But that fear can stop us from so many things, and also self-sabotage. I'm glad you were able to have that conversation with your boss. Not everybody is in that, has that kind of relationship, or would get that response necessarily, even if they're doing a great job, right? Yeah. So yeah, that's really great to hear. There's a positive experience out of work.
Absolutely. But I think that's where it's really important. That's where, and particularly for remote working, that's where self-care is critical. And mm-hmm. that's where you have those conversations with yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, little things like having your affirmations up on the wall, you know, behind your computer if you're doing all these kind of Zoom calls, mm-hmm. or, you know, writing a letter to yourself when you're feeling powerful and when you're feeling strong, mm-hmm. and writing to yourself and saying, you're great at this. Think of all the things, great things you've done. You can achieve this, and do it from a place of strength at that point in time when you really feel it. And then when you're in a time when you can't necessarily get that reassurance from someone else, you can go back to it and use that as something to help you. So that's, we need to be creative around how can we take control of it rather than depend on someone else for it.
Yes. Yeah. Cause we can't always get it from outside, and you can't rely on outside stimuli as well for that. You need to get it from within. I like that, writing a letter to yourself when you're in that, when you have that feeling of empowerment and you have that strength, and you don't want to write it when you're in a down state. You can journal about your feelings, but write that letter of empowerment when you're feeling awesome, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's the inner critic is mm-hmm. is incredibly strong. And just being even aware of that, and you know that it's really nasty, the kind of things that we say to ourselves.
Yeah.
You can't do it. You're rubbish. You would. Mm-hmm. I knew you would always fail. No one will like you. And when you actually reflect on the kind of things it says, you can see that it's not serving you in any way. And actually a nice way of doing that is, first of all, naming your inner critic. Mine's called the gremlin. And, you know, when I hear the gremlin, and I kind of go, right, okay, that's my gremlin. And how could I rephrase that into something which, how would I talk to a friend about that? What would I say to them? And you would never say the things that you say to yourself to a friend.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You wouldn't say that to anybody else, but you say it to yourself.
No. No. But a really nice tool actually is super simple. If you feel that you're going down that kind of spiral of negativity, mm-hmm. those kind of words, you can use a stop sign, like a big red stop sign.
Okay.
Mentally have that image, mm-hmm. and actually you can say stop mm-hmm. out loud. And maybe even stand up, you know, your body, your posture and makes a huge difference in terms of the messages that are sent to your brain. So mm-hmm. Actually saying stop, it really is really effective rather than, mm-hmm. And then you're not ruminating for minutes or hours and things.
Mm-hmm. And another technique I've heard recently was wearing a bracelet and changing the bracelet to your other wrist just to make a physical change too. I like the visual of the stop sign though too. That's because we all know what a stop sign looks like. So
exactly, right? Yeah, yeah. It's easy to use, but it's very powerful. It's interesting. Yeah.
Mm. And that's the key, right? Is to stop it. So first is being aware of it and recognizing it, then stop it, and then change the direction so that you have a new way of thinking. It's very easy to get into that downward spiral and just ruminate and beat yourself up and all that. So
yeah, and then it's easy because you then beat yourself up about beating yourself up, you know.
Exactly.
You
know, yes.
But I think what's important to understand, coming back to the kind of evolution side of things, you know, our brain is wired to look for threat. Mm-hmm. So 60-70% of our thoughts tend to be negative, and I say that in inverted commas because it is actually trying to help us. It's trying to look for things that could be dangerous for us. Mm-hmm. But, you know, back to the last point, the fact is that a lot of these things, they're not dangerous for us. So mm-hmm. When you understand it's my brain is constantly trying to help me, to keep me safe. Mm-hmm. But you can control it. Like, you can influence it and you can control it. And using some of those kind of tools are really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like naming it too is an interesting idea. Your gremlin, it kind of makes it a little bit more fun to deal with it too, because you're like, oh, it's my gremlin getting out. You just stop it right now. No gremlins today, right? So you can you can have a little bit more fun with it and make it a little bit of a game instead of having the joy of beating yourself up.
Yeah, and yeah, you're absolutely right. A few of the people who've done the course, they've some of the names that have come up, I probably can't repeat on this, but they're really, you know, they're very funny and really definitely helps, because it takes it from being very internal to something mm-hmm. which is further away, and yeah, it's much easier to kind of go, oh, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
I have one of my closest friends, when she was young, her name, I'm going to give a fake name for both of them, but say her name was Sarah. And when she was grumpy, her dad would say, oh, Cynthia's here today. So who do we have for breakfast? Is it Sarah or is it Cynthia? And it was the same kind of thing, right? And I don't know if that made her in a better mood or not, but he named her gremlin.
A lot of this stuff is about having the language around it, right? And when you can take it from being something very personal to something which, yes, you can kind of have a laugh about or just communicate mm-hmm. with other people about, and just say, look, my gremlin's here today. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, or this has come up for me. It makes it less emotional. It's less attached to the emotion.
Mm-hmm. Just identifying and being aware of something takes a lot of the power over you, I find, right? Because it doesn't have as, when you're aware of it and you can, like, oh, you can kind of see it outside of yourself almost, right? Mm. And it's like, I know why this is happening, so I can respond in a different way.
Yeah, and self-awareness is the first step in terms of on that path to, okay, so I see it, therefore what can I do about it? If you let it envelop you, that's where it can become overwhelming.
Yeah. And of course, with depending on, like, some people with depression or whatever, that can be much more challenging to get out of that cycle. But if people are listening and they're dealing with that, I would, you know, encourage you to get some help and get professional help with that. If it's not something you can just turn a switch on, because sometimes it's not that easy to just turn that switch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what's important is that there's a balance in terms of the kind of medicinal side, and there's absolutely a place for that, you know, from sometimes there's a chemical imbalance which needs to be corrected. And at the same time, there's something like exercise can have a more lasting impact on depression than actual antidepressants. So I think that there's the kind of behavioral piece which people can do, and things like mindfulness and exercise are so important in terms of being able to manage if you're in more of that kind of depressed, going down that path more. But certainly from obviously people need to talk to their kind of professionals about it. I think what we need to be careful of is sometimes now it can be easy just to jump straight to the pill box, which isn't necessarily always the thing
to do. Yeah. And I also with exercise too is especially in our world now, more creativity is needed, right? So like I admit I haven't been the best about exercise in my entire life, but I'm working on it. It's a evolution, as you say. Yeah. And I'm starting to do more indoor walking. So I love the 80s music. So I put on some music and I just walk my halls and freak my cats out a little bit with the walking the halls. But you know, you have to find ways to do things.
Exactly. And this is the thing. It comes back to confidence. It's wherever in your life you're applying it, it's about taking one step. It's not a destination. It is a journey. Mm-hmm. And what happens when you take that one step, it's important you celebrate it. Because what happens is that you then get a dopamine hit in your brain. And when with that dopamine hit, dopamine actually is, Dr. Andrew Huberman is a neuroscientist, and he refers to it as the pursuit molecule. So what it does is it encourages you to take another step. And this is the thing about confidence, is it's about that series of steps, and each time you take one, you are then encouraged to do the next. That's why it's so important that you have milestones along your journey. So maybe you're walking your halls in your house, and then you walk around the block, and then you walk, you know, around the park, or, you know, then maybe it ends up running or whatever. But each one of those, particularly at the hardest point of the journey, you say, look, well done me. Like I've gone up here and I've got out the house, or, you know, I'm taking that first step. And that in itself is helping your brain rewire to be more positive and actually want to do more.
And it's that taking that first step, whatever that, whether it's exercise or talking to your boss or starting a new project or whatever it is, taking that first step is usually the hardest step. But once you have that step, it's like what you're talking about, the dopamine, and it's easier because you've got that momentum, and it's easier once you actually start. So it's the starting.
And it's funny because 99% of the time it's so much easier than you thought it would be. You know, one, and Mel Robbins is an amazing lady. She does you know, speaking and coaching, and she talks about 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and just, you know, you've got 5 seconds to make the decision, and, you know, in that 5 seconds, just do it or you're not going to do it. And that is very powerful in terms of just, you know, whatever challenge it is, just don't overthink it. Just take the step.
And oh, the risk. Yeah. I love Mel Robbins too. She's got some really great stuff. I follow her on Instagram. I highly recommend following her on Instagram. She posts some really great stuff. Yeah. I also remember years ago, I read Tony Robbins' Awaken the Giant Within. And he talked about a lot of times, or most of the time, maybe all the time, I'm not sure. We already know our decision. We just have to justify it in our mind. So we take the time to analyze it in that, but we already know. And so it's making that decision too, that you're going to take that step. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And I think being aware that your inner critic, your gremlin, mm-hmm. may well come up and start bringing up all these mm-hmm. things that you can't because, and noticing that, mm-hmm. and kind of disassociating that. Okay. Well, what's real here? What is the actual truth? If mm-hmm. I listen to you, you'll fail, you'll be terrible at it. What's the evidence that I see yeah. behind that?
Yeah.
And actually saying, well, what happens if I don't do that? What's the cost of the inaction? Mm-hmm. Do I still want to be in this place in 1 year, 2 year, 5 years time? When I look back at that point in time and I haven't taken this step, how will I feel? Mm-hmm. When you start to break things down at that level, sometimes it becomes much more real in terms of why I don't want to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want to feel bad about myself. Mm-hmm. So actually, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because not making a decision is also making a decision.
Yeah.
Right? Like yeah. You're still making a choice, whether you mm-hmm. want to think about it or not. You're still making the choice to either not take an action or take an action. So yeah, that's a really good point. And I love the what's the cost, you know, a lot of times, especially when you're talking with people, it's like, so where will you be if you don't do this in yeah. another, even 6 months or a year or like, so are you going to be happy with where you're going to be if you don't do this? Is that okay with you? And if yeah. it is, then that's okay.
Yeah.
100%. That's okay. But you need to yeah. be okay with that choice. Right.
Exactly. And that, to be honest with you, I think that's probably part of what's fueled me over the years. It's been, I don't want to regret anything. You know, the thought for me that I could have, you know, I could reach, you know, touch wood, 90 years old and look back and think, oh, I wish I'd done this and I wish I'd done that. So what I've found is just trying things. Mm-hmm. When you think, you know, hopefully life is long. If when you kind of say, right, I'm just going to take 7 days and I'm going to try this new morning ritual. And you know what, if it doesn't work, fine, it's only 7 days of my life. Mm-hmm. But if it does work, it could change my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you look at those two alternatives, actually, why wouldn't you try it? Mm-hmm. What have you really got to lose? Mm-hmm. One of my favorite sayings is you never regret exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No one ever turns around and says, oh, I wish I hadn't gone for that walk, or I wish I hadn't gone for that run. Mm-hmm. You know, you always, you know, you get the endorphins start flowing, you know, you feel better about yourself. Mm-hmm. And so at those points when, you know, I was living in London and it was pouring with rain and I was going to do my boot camp in the park, I would always say to myself, you never regret exercise. And, you know, lo and behold, even though I was freezing cold and, you know, and wet in the dark, running around Hyde Park, thinking I was a complete lunatic, I would still come out of there and, you know, and be so happy and you know, feel mm-hmm. better and great about mm-hmm. myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, and part of that too is there's the exercise, but it's also another confirmation like that you're doing what you want to do and you're doing what your expectations are for yourself. And so you set that goal mm-hmm. of doing that boot camp. And so again, celebrating that you did it that day, mm-hmm. even though there's always a bunch of reasons why not to do something.
Yeah.
But there's what it comes down to, like Simon Sinek says, is why do you want to do it in the first place?
Yeah.
Like what's your why, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that being at a higher level is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it comes back again to that same thing. It's like, don't overthink it. You know, when I did on a Monday night when I was finishing work and thinking, do I go to boot camp? As soon as I allowed myself to go into a, oh, I don't know, maybe I'm, you know, I realized that that was what stopped me doing it. So I just would get changed into my gym gear and not allow my brain to go down that kind of rumination side. And I would just find myself on the tube going there without thinking about it too much.
Peter Shankman talks about that he just puts on his exercise clothes and just does it right away. Like, he doesn't think about it, and he gets up really early. He's one of those like 4 a.m.er people.
It's really interesting because there's different pieces of research around that, right? And I think there's certainly the 4 a.m. people. I'm certainly not that, but what I think is really important is sleep as well. And you know, the vast majority of people don't get enough sleep. And there's an amazing book called Why We Sleep. I forget the author at the moment, but the processes that we go through, it's like actually a dishwasher for your brain. Like, it's cleaning everything in your brain as you sleep. And if we don't have enough time sleeping, those processes aren't working. And you're much more likely to get Alzheimer's if you're not sleeping enough. I think we're understanding so much more around how critical it is now. So sacrificing that, I get it in terms of, yes, I'm up and doing boot camp at 5 in the morning. It's just as long as you've got enough sleep the other end. I think that's
important. I was on a class with him, and somebody asked him, how do you get up so early? And he said, I go to bed early. That's it. Again, it's simple. You go to bed, get early, get up early. If that's what you want to do, I'm good with when I get up. So
good. And I think I think that's something yoga taught me, actually. There's a real, when you would go to a yoga class and they just say, look, you are where you are. You know, maybe today you can't do what you did last week. It's okay. Just accept where your body is and who you are, and do the practice that you need to for today. And it's a really interesting, that for me was kind of permission to be yourself. That I think was certainly kind of through my school and maybe upbringing. You know, there's always like you must, you know, learn this way, do this way. And actually kind of saying, you know what, if you're a morning person, great, but if you're an evening person, do it differently. Do what works for you, and do what's authentic to you, and that's, you'll have the best outcome.
And that also comes back to knowing who you are. You need to accept who you are. And if I don't want to get up early, I like working in the afternoon and in the evening, and that's my best time anyway. So, you know, I'm good with that. I don't want to be a 4 a.m.er, and I'm okay with that. Yeah. You know, I love that. You are where you are.
Yeah.
It's true. And that's where you start, is wherever you are on that day, in that moment, whatever it is.
And one of the words which comes up a lot in the courses is, I should be this.
Yeah.
I should be a better mother. I should be better at work. I should speak up. And what we talk about is, how can you change should to could? You know, should is full of judgment.
I hate the shoulds.
And guilt. It's such a heavy word. And actually, if you say could, it's full of possibility and opportunity. So that's a little bit like the gremlin. It's like, listen to how much you saying should. How much does it come up, and catch yourself and say, how could I rephrase that into something which is more could?
Yeah. And why do we think we should? Like, is it someone else's expectations, or is it something that we actually could do or need to do? Right.
Yeah.
Like, if it's someone else's expectations and you don't need to do it, then you don't need to do it.
it's that kind of consciousness about it. It's like, okay, someone's expectations, how do I feel about that? Is that something which resonates with me and my values, what's important to me? And when I prioritize it against these other things which are important to me in my life, how does it fit? And, you know, is it is it a no or is it a not yet? Or mm-hmm. is it a...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so it all comes back down to what you talked about right at the beginning and your values and knowing who you are and knowing that you are enough. You really, really good tips you've provided. What is one thing, if somebody just took away one thing from our conversation, what's the number one thing you'd want people to start doing right away?
I think it was, I've seen lack of confidence across so many people, whether it's friends, colleagues, or teams that I've managed. And a lack of confidence drives so much indecision or lack of action, and it can be such a heavy weight in people's lives. So mm-hmm. if there's one thing I would say is take a step, because every step that you take is a step towards more confidence, mm-hmm. and congratulate yourself for that. Mm-hmm. And that will only produce more. So if you have more confidence in your life, you will be happier. The research, Sean Anker is an amazing happiness researcher, they found that happiness leads to success, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. Let's not chase success, hoping that we'll be happy at some point. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you're happy with the place you're in, then it will lead to success. So mm-hmm. confidence and happiness are very closely linked. So if you can take those steps and congratulate yourself, then you're on the path to a better, more purposeful life.
Yeah, that's awesome. So taking that step, that's awesome. And so some of the other things that we talked about, just to do a little bit of a recap. So we talked about knowing your values and using positive affirmations and like really embracing them and knowing them in your head and naming your inner critic. Your gremlin, as you like to call yours. I like that. Writing a letter to yourself to when you're feeling really strong and really powerful, and writing a really positive, encouraging letter to yourself so that when you're feeling not so great, you can read that. Yeah. And so that's really good. And the stop when the gremlin pops up and visualize that stop sign so that you can really, change the direction of where your brain is going, where you're thinking. And then also thinking about what's the cost if you don't take those actions, and are you going to be happy or not happy? Are you going to be satisfied or content with the results if you don't take that step? Mm. So those are really my favorite, I think. Because I hate the shoulds, is changing that should into a could, and that could is actually possibility. That's really powerful. Because shoulds can really overtake our thinking.
Yeah. And all of these things, like, you know, you can have a big should crossed out on your wall, mm-hmm. and have good underneath it. Having the visuals around that are very, mm-hmm. very powerful in terms of setting up your environment in a positive way that will kind of keep you on track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. excellent. That's a really good tip. So where could people find you? Where could they connect with your stuff?
excuse me. So my website is brainpoweredcoaching.com. Okay. And I'm on Instagram at brainpoweredcoaching. Probably those are the two best things. I run a course called Authentic Confidence, and that goes through a lot of what we talked about, and obviously in a lot more detail and over a few weeks. And that's for individuals and corporates. So, those are the main things.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today, Carolyn. This was jam packed with full of information and really helpful tips. I appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you. Lovely to chat.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening to the You Can Do It Too podcast.
If you feel inspired or gain some insights, then please subscribe. If you're already subscribing, please rate and review it. I'd really appreciate it. If you want to get some more information about me and what I have to offer, go to my website, stepstepick.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope to see you next time.